Hey, Jared Morris here. If you know anything about Rainmaker Digital and Copyblogger, you may know that we produce incredible live events. Well, some would say that we produce incredible live events as an excuse to throw great parties, but that's another story. We've got another one coming up this October in Denver. It's called Digital Commerce Summit, and it is entirely focused on giving you the smartest ways to create and sell digital products and services. You can find out more at rainmaker.fm/summit. That's rainmaker.fm/summit. We'll be talking about Digital Commerce Summit in more detail as it gets closer. But for now, I'd like to let a few attendees from our past events speak for us.
For me, it's just hearing from the experts. I mean, this is my first industry event, so it's awesome to learn new stuff and also get confirmation that we're not doing it completely wrong where I work.
The best part of the conference for me is being able to mingle with people and realize that you have connections with everyone here. It feels like LinkedIn Live. I also love the parties after each day, being able to talk to the speakers, talk to other people over here. First time, people have been here before.
I think the best part of the conference for me is understanding how I can service my customers a little more easily. Seeing all the different facets and components of various enterprises then helps me pick the best tools.
Hey, we agree. One of the biggest reasons we host a conference every year is so that we can learn how to service our customers, people like you, more easily. And here are just a few more words from folks who have come to our past live events.
It's really fun. I think it's a great mix of beginner information and advanced information, so I'm really learning a lot and having a lot of fun.
Conference is great, especially because it's a single track conference where you don't get distracted by like, which session should I go to and am I missing something?
I mean, the training and everything, the speakers have been awesome, but I think the coolest aspect for me has been connecting with both people who are putting it on and then the other attendees.
So that's it for now. There's a lot more to come on Digital Commerce Summit, and I really hope to see you there in October. Again, to get all the details and the very best deal on tickets, head over to rainmaker.fm/summit. That's rainmaker.fm/summit.
A lot of people aspire to write a book. Maybe you do, but you probably know it's a complex process. Zero to Book is documenting the journey from start to finish, so you can learn how to take your book from an idea to a published product. Listen in as best-selling author Jeff Goins helps Pamela Wilson go from zero to book.
Jeff, I can't believe I'm saying this, but the book is done.
I can't believe you're saying that either, because that's never true.
I know. Well, that's so true. But it's, you know, as done as it can be at this point, yeah. And it's only August 1st. I just, like, I'm actually ahead of schedule, which is kind of crazy. But it's, this piece of it has come together pretty easily. The design and figuring out how to get it formatted for Kindle and all that stuff. I mean, it was tough while I was chipping away at it, but now it's kind of come together. So I find myself 2 months out from the day that I want to launch the book, which is October 1st. And I have these 2 months to kind of play with. I mean, I still have to design it for print, so there's still a little bit of production work to do, but not nearly as much as I expected. So the great news is that I have 2 months that I can focus on marketing. So I want to ask you all these questions that I have about marketing a book, because I know you've done it a lot before. So let me just give you a hint about what I'm going to be asking you so that people listening also know. So first of all, I want to know how important the launch is in the grand scheme of things. And I suspect it's going to depend on your goals, so I'll share my goals. Okay. I also want to know a little bit about collecting blurbs for the book, because I know those are important. Those are those quotes from hopefully well-known people that you put in the back, in the front, all over your book to get people to either take it off the shelf or pick it out from an online bookseller and buy it. I'd love to know anything you can share with me about getting Amazon reviews, like ahead of launch, hopefully, and about the Amazon author account. All of those things. So that's what I'm going to be asking you about. And I guess the place I would like to start is, how important is the launch? If somebody like me is not really aiming for any bestseller list.
Yeah. So a launch is, so you were talking about blurbs, launch, you know, just having sort of a marketing plan. When I launched The Art of Work, it hit some bestsellers list. It did well, better than any book I've ever done before. And somebody asked me, like, what was the one thing that you did that, you know, made the difference with this book? And I appreciate the specificity of that question. But it's kind of like saying, like, what was the one thing that you did to raise good kids?
I know. Yeah. Totally. That was the first thing that went through my mind, was the one thing I did was I did all the things.
Yeah, that's what I said. I said the one thing that we did was we did a lot of things.
Right.
And I think all of these things are important. Of course, if everything is a priority, then nothing is. But the way I approach marketing a book is, first, I want to write a book that I'm proud to talk about and that is easy to market. And just because a book is good doesn't necessarily mean that it's easy to market. And that's what we talked about, like, at the beginning of this show. Do you have a big idea? Do you have something that, in the right crowd, in the right environment, you can say, when somebody asks you what your book is about, you can say, you know, that thing that everybody, you know, in our niche struggles with? Well, I wrote a book to solve that problem. You know, something where at the end of the conversation, people go, wow, I need to read that, or I know somebody who needs to read it. That's the kind of book that you want to write, at least when it comes to marketing. So first of all, I want to do that.
I have to tell you, Jeff, it's so funny because I remember when you and I were talking about that at the very beginning of this process. And you're anxious to get started, right? So there's a part of you that's kind of like, oh, I don't know. I don't want to beat the whole big idea thing over the head. Like, you know, it'll sort itself out. But I have to tell you, I am so glad for every bit of time that I put into developing a concept that would be easy to explain. Because at this point, I now have done a handful of interviews where people have asked me about my book, and I have a good story to tell about it, you know, because I spent that time developing the big idea early on. So I'm grateful for that. And it now that I'm on the other end of the process, I realize it truly is important to have an easy to understand big idea.
Yeah. And like you said, you want to get into the book. It doesn't necessarily feel urgent. And it's not at that point, but it is important. And you do want to begin with the end in mind. And the end of writing a book is that somebody will read it.
Right.
I mean, bottom line. And the way that you get people to read it is you get them to buy it. The way that you get them to buy it is you get people to talk about it. And the way that you get people to talk about it is you have an interesting idea. I love that you did that. And trust me, I've written what I think are pretty good books, but I didn't think about it at the beginning. And the sales suffered as a result. So I've been on both sides of this. In fact, my worst selling book was my second traditionally published book, The In-Between, kind of hit the sophomore slump. And I spent so much more time on that book making it what I thought was great. And I spent very little time thinking about the marketability of it and the cohesiveness of the idea. And I just thought, you know, it'll market itself, or once I've finished the book, then I can figure out how to market it. And I realized I'd kind of painted myself into a corner, and there were only so many things that I could say about that book once it was finished. So, you know, it's just helpful to be thinking about these things as you're going through them. So you asked, how important is the big launch? Whether or not you want to hit a bestseller list, I think it's still important, because what you want when you launch any kind of product, especially a book, is you want to have that initial big splash that can lead to the long tail of sales. For the past year, for my book, we sold about 50,000 copies, and about 15,000 of those came from the big splash, you know, and the other 35 came from the long tail. So from a number standpoint, I think if you write a good book that can reach a lot of people, and you don't give up on just, you know, continuing to talk about it, the long tail can beat the big splash. But in my opinion, you don't really have a long tail if you don't have a big splash, some kind of splash.
Right. Interesting.
You have to have some kind of event that says, hey, this thing is here right now. And you get all of your early adopters, and then you get them talking about it. Seth Godin calls these people sneezers. They're the people that get the thing to catch on, get it to, you know, make the idea contagious. And without that initial spike, that it's just hard to see the long tail stuff that comes after it. So I think the big launch, and big is, you know, put those in air quotes, is relative. I think it's important because it's kind of the first domino in a series of dominoes. So I wouldn't neglect it. And some people do. They go, oh, yeah, I got a book out. And I think at that point, you know, the game isn't over. And I used to actually think this. I used to put a lot of priority, like 90% priority on the big splash. I don't do that anymore. You know, but without it, it just makes everything harder. I used to think that it was just like, if you don't have a big launch, you might as well move on to your next book because you're done.
Interesting.
I don't believe that anymore.
Well, and partly you don't believe it, I'm thinking, because you have seen the numbers behind that long tail that happens after your launch, right?
Yep. Yeah. Typically what happens is this. If you write an okay book and it doesn't have some sort of wow concept. And again, wow is relative to your audience, to your niche, to your industry. I've used niche and niche interchangeably because people have opinions on that word.
You're an international kind of guy. I can tell.
Well, I used both, you know, for the highbrow and lowbrow listeners.
And we won't say which is which.
Yeah, right. For the people who speak French and everybody else. Right. Yeah, so I forget the question, but it was fun talking about niche and niche.
Well, we were just talking about the fact that so many of the sales really do happen after the launch, but I think it's kind of hard to tell, you know, if those long tail sales happen because you've had a big launch or just because enough time has passed. I would think that having a big launch, even if it doesn't show these massive numbers, creates an awareness about your book existing. I don't know if this happens to you, but this happens to me all the time. I'll hear about a book and I'm like, well, that's intriguing. But, you know, I'm reading 3 books right now already. So I like the idea of this book, but I really can't read it right now. So I'm not going to buy it today. And then time goes on and you kind of forget, right? And then you might see the book again in a couple of months when you do actually have time to read it, and that's when you buy it. But if you hadn't seen it in the first place and you didn't have that awareness, you may never give it a second look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the long tail works best. I'll just say the long tail works, period, when you have an interesting book. And it doesn't work if you've got something that you've hyped like crazy and then after people read it, they don't talk about it. This is why it's really important to bake the marketing of your book into the book. What are the things that you want people to be saying about your book? It needs to be in the book. You know, this goes beyond tweetables. My friend Lisa Turkhurst calls these sticky statements. And when she writes a book, you know, she writes what she wants to write. But in each chapter, she intentionally puts a phrase or two that sort of encapsulates, this is what this chapter is about, and this is what I want the reader to take away. And sometimes we just get so clever and we roll our eyes and we go, oh, that's, you know, like pandering or whatever. My audience is smart enough to know, you know, what they should take away from it. And it has nothing to do with intelligence and everything to do with the fact that people are busy and you need to very clearly communicate with them what they're getting into and what they're going to get out of it. And when you do your job well of clearly articulating your argument and giving your audience something to do and something to talk about, it just makes it easier for them to share it. So when you have an interesting idea, you get a long tail. But you can have all the hype and all the launch gimmicks in the world, and you can hit the New York Times list doing this. And in fact, most books, which hit the New York Times list selling, you know, 10,000 copies in a week, they don't do this. They do the big hype, and then they don't have a particularly interesting book, and then it stops selling. Most books that hit the list hit it, and then disappear. But the ones that are consistently showing up again and again and again, and the books that go on to sell millions of copies or become the leading, you know, resource in a certain industry, it's they've got something of this. What we talked about earlier, you know, the Murray Davis's index of interesting. There's some sort of counterintuitive or just, you know, fascinating, you know, appeal to, you know, the reader. And when you do this well, when you write an interesting book and you launch it, you have a good chance of having that long tail effect. So I approach a launch this way, and this may be useful, in three parts. One, the pre-launch. Everything that happens before the book is available. And that could be pre-orders. It can just be, you know, sort of hyping, this is coming, this is coming. But you need to be doing something before the book comes. You think about the most recent Harry Potter book that came out. A friend of mine was a big Harry Potter fan, was waiting. And then the day it came out, they went on Amazon and ordered it from Amazon Prime Now, and they got it in 45 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Which is available in Nashville. I don't know if it's available everywhere. But, you know, like that's the power of anticipation. Then there's the launch, which is typically the first week to the first month. That's when you're going to capitalize on all of this anticipation. That's what we're doing the pre-launch right now, Pamela.
Yes.
And when it comes time for your book to come out, everybody listens to the show. But, you know, like people that have been following this process, they're going to buy the book. I mean, that's where those sales are going to come from. And then you'll start, you know, you'll reach your friends and your fans and you know, some people kind of on the fringes that have heard about it and go, okay, I'll check it out. But mostly you're kind of at the early adopter stage. Then there's post-launch, and that's all the long tail stuff. And as I mentioned, you know, the pre-launch of The Art of Work sold 15,500 copies. That's, you know, that's a lot of copies. And we did that in a couple of months, really, just, you know, pre-orders leading up to the launch and then, you know, the launch. Then we sold a few thousand more copies within the first month. And then it was the long tail stuff. And then it took really another 10 months to sell another 35,000 copies. And there was no one big strategy. It was just people reading it. They were talking about it. And I continued to write, you know, guest posts and articles and do speaking gigs and, you know, promote the book through podcasts and in a variety of ways. And so all that together makes for a pretty good book launch process. But when you look at it in the grand scheme of things, I mean, that was a year-long process. Really, for you, it's 2 years because, you know, a year ago we talked about you wanted to write and publish a book, and we started doing this podcast. It will have been, you know, about a year when the book comes out since that first conversation. And then you'll have another year of, you know, promoting the book and getting it out there. And, you know, I think your the first year or two after a book comes out, I mean, that's an opportunity to keep selling a copy of a book. It's not old news. It's old news to you because at this point, you know, the idea is several years old to you, and the book itself, you know, you've lived with for a couple of years, still very new to the audience. I mean, think about a book that came out a year or two ago that you heard about but just haven't gotten around to reading yet. It still feels new to you. And so long as you as the author don't, you know, move on too quickly to the next thing, you have an opportunity there to, you know, capitalize. And I don't know what the percentages are, but, you know, basically 60% of my sales came after all the big hoopla, all the big launch stuff. So it's all important. But if I had to say definitively, what should you do? Pre-launch, launch, post-launch. And each of those requires a different strategy. Anticipation, you know, is the pre-launch. Urgency and you know, call to action is all about the launch. Go get this now, and maybe you'll get some bonuses or, you know, something for being kind of an early adopter. And then there's, you know, the post-launch, which is really when you start reaching people that have never heard of you, friends of friends of friends, or you're appearing as a guest on podcasts or whatever, and they're buying the book because they've heard about it or because somebody they trust vouched for you or for this book. And that's the process that I used to approach this.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I am squarely in pre-launch right now. And one of the things I've been thinking about is this idea of these blurbs. So the blurbs are found on a print book, they're found on the back cover. On an ebook, oftentimes they're found in the first couple of pages, or they might be used on the Amazon sales page. And hopefully the blurbs are by people who are recognizable in the space that your topic belongs to. And there are people who have read the book and are saying, this book is amazing, right?
Yep. Right.
So I'm at that point, and I have some people. There's one guy named Jeff Goins. I have high hopes he's going to provide a blurb. We'll see. But
I hear he's picky.
Oh, well, we'll see. I'm going to twist his arm to see if he'll write a blurb. But there are, you know, I have a handful of people I want to approach about this. And I wondered if you had any hints about it. I'm assuming you need to send along the book in some format. Do you ask people what format they prefer, or how do you approach it when you're looking for blurbs?
Yeah. First of all, I think one of the best things that you can do for blurbs, for book endorsements, is, and this is kind of part of your pre-launch strategy, and some people think they're totally worthless and other people think they're, you know, amazing. And I think it's probably somewhere in between. I have seen books on shelves and go, what's that book? And then I saw a blurb, a quote on the cover from an author I respected and gone, wow, I should take this seriously. So I do think they work for the right audience, and I think they're really good, you know, just social proof for the reader who's kind of on the fence, and they go, well, if all these people think it's great, I should check it out. So I think they work within reason. They're not, you know, like getting some big blurb is not going to sell, you know, that alone is not going to be the reason you sell a million copies, but it helps. I mean, it all helps. This is one of the things that include all the things. So how do you get a blurb? I think there are a few different kinds of endorsements you want to get. You want to get the ones that you like through personal relationships, you know, you can get somebody to say yes. So that's kind of the first group of people that already know you and can vouch for who you are. Then the second kind of group is people that are in your industry. Maybe they're a peer, but you don't necessarily know them that well. But they're going to endorse the book itself, right? They're going to endorse not you because I don't know you, but they're going to endorse the book because they read it and they liked it. And this is very common, you know, as long as you know how to ask in the right way, which I'll share in a minute. The probability of somebody saying yes is better than 50-50. I'm not going to say like you're going to get most people to say yes, but when I started writing books and I didn't know anybody, I don't know, 80-90% of the endorsement requests I made, you know, they said yes to.
Okay, so I want to make sure I have this straight. So what you're saying is that some of the blurbs are actually people who are vouching for you as a person, as a subject matter expert.
Yeah, I mean, typically an endorsement. I didn't know any of this stuff. I figured this out by asking people. And I wrote my first book. I had one influential friend at the time, like really influential friend, Michael Hyatt, who has helped my career in more ways than one. And I've mentioned him before. And I asked him for an endorsement. And actually, I asked him to write the foreword, kind of like you know,
Brian Clark is doing for me.
Which is great. Super smart. Because all of a sudden, this person kind of becomes a quote-unquote co-author, and their name is on the book. And if people who trust them, are now going to trust you. But I asked him, I said, hey, could you write this forward? And he said, well, I can write it from two perspectives. I can, because a forward in many ways is kind of an introduction to the book, but also to the author. And the reason for a forward is that you're treading into new territory, and either you're crossing genres or you're becoming an author for the first time and you need somebody to vouch for you. And he said, do you want me to vouch for you? Do we want to talk about you, or do we want to talk about the book? And he kind of did both, but I said, well, you know, I want you to talk about the book, you know, like I know, like it's great that you know and like and trust me, but I want your forward to reflect your experience with this subject of the book and the theme and so on. But I learned something from that, which is that when people endorse your work, they're either endorsing you or they're endorsing the work. And it's whatever they have the most experience with. Now, if you open a book and you read somebody's endorsement, it usually goes one of two ways. I've known so-and-so for so many years, and they are the authority on such-and-such. Or I read this book and I cried, and you will too, kind of thing.
Right, right.
So there are people who will endorse – who you will ask and they know you and they'll endorse you. They'll endorse the book. Then there are people who don't necessarily know you, but they're peers. And it's just, honestly, it's part of the game of being an author is you're going to be asked to endorse books and you'll say yes to some of them because when it comes time for you to ask other people to endorse, your book, you're going to want to ask some of these people. And I think you have to be careful, honestly, because you can get into this game where it's just like, I help you, you help me, I scratch your back, you scratch mine kind of thing. And I think it can become a slippery slope. But the bottom line is authors are used to being asked to endorse books, even books from authors that they've never heard of before. And if they like the book and they have time, you know, they may say yes, as long as you ask in the right way, which we'll talk about in a second. Lastly, this is sort of an optional group of people that you can ask. So you're asking people that you know, people whose expertise your audience would trust. And then lastly, celebrities, like legitimate celebrities. I read a memoir recently where the actress Angelica Houston, she had a little blurb on it. And I was like, huh, that's interesting. You know, it was this like spiritual memoir. And Angelica Houston said, you know, this is great. I read another book, a memoir too, incidentally, from some author I'd never heard of before, but on the cover of it was Stephen King's endorsement, and it was the best memoir I've ever read.
Wow.
Yeah, the book is called A Three-Dog Life, and it's about this woman whose husband basically gets brain damage, and she has to send him to a home because he's going to hurt himself. And she has these three dogs that she lives with and, you know, finds great comfort in. But I saw that book and Stephen King said, you know, on the front, Stephen King, who is an author, but also a celebrity. He was not endorsing something in his genre. It wasn't horror. It was just, it's unusual. And when you see a celebrity endorsing something, a name that you immediately recognize, but you don't immediately associate their name with that thing. I don't associate Angelica Houston with spiritual memoirs. I don't associate Stephen King with those kinds of books. And yet here they are endorsing these books. I go, that's interesting. It catches, you know, your attention. Those are the three types of blurbs that you can get. And each one has kind of a strategic purpose. Now, how do you get them? First, you know, for the first, it depends on the relationship. I'm a fan of getting, like knocking down the easy dominoes first. So get the first ones first, you know, the ones that you already know that are going to say yes. So in your case, you know, you've worked with Brian. He's an easy ask. You should get him to say yes, because if he says yes, you can basically leverage that to get other endorsements. So then you can go to everybody, you know, in the online marketing, content marketing space. For example, you could go to like Seth Godin and say, you know, Seth, I wrote this book about content marketing. It's sort of, you know, building on some of the things that you talked about 15 years ago with permission marketing. Here's a list of people that are already endorsing, including your friend Brian Clark. You know, would you be willing to, give an endorsement? And typically the way that I like, so that's the second level. First level is people you know. So example, Brian. Second level is people who are
know people I know.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Or people who are leaders in your industry, and you just go, hey, I wrote a book about this thing. And maybe you know some of the people that are endorsing it, or maybe this is just the kind of thing that you like to endorse. And
you send the book, correct?
So what I do is I ask first. I say, hey, I wrote a book, and here's what it's about. Here's here's some people who've blurbed it. It would mean the world to me if you would look at it and consider writing an endorsement. Does that work for you? Would you be interested in that? And then I get a yes, I'm in kind of thing. And then I send them the book. And then when I send them the book, I give them a deadline. So you can do that all at once. I just sort of try to stair step it. But basically you need to do three things. You need to ask, and you need to do that succinctly. You need to try to offer some reason for why they would say yes. And the reason needs to not be, oh, this will make you look really cool, or I'll make you famous. It needs to be, you know, this fits in line with the kind of work that you've already endorsed, or, you know, some of your peers are endorsing it and would love, you know, your endorsement as well. And then lastly, you have to give them a deadline. If it wouldn't be too much trouble, the publisher, you know, and you're the publisher, but you still have a deadline, you know, we need this back by such and such date. And, you know, let me know. Now, here's the surprising thing about this, Pamela, is I would say, I don't know, half or more endorsements are not written by the person endorsing the work. They're written by the author themselves.
Really? I'm sitting here.
I thought that might surprise you.
I'm sitting here with my mouth wide open. Okay. So really? Okay. So how does that work?
So, you know, you go to all your friends and they'll probably write something original. And then you go to kind of those mid-level people and then, you know, potentially go to celebrities. You ask them if they want to endorse it. And then typically they'll say, sure, let me read it and I'll give you an endorsement. Or, as is often the case, they'll say something like, well, what do you want me to write? And then you give them a sample endorsement. That's not uncommon to give them a sample endorsement. And then you will see them like literally copy and paste that and kind of edit it into their own words. Or they'll just say, okay, that looks good.
Yeah.
And I that's just how it works. And these people are busy. They want to champion your work, especially if they like you or have heard of you. And the truth is that you don't necessarily want them to just say whatever they want, because most endorsements are long-winded and you can't actually use them. Now, Stephen King saying, this is the best memoir I've ever read. Very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Like, great endorsement, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Most authors don't go there. Most people are endorsing books. They go, you know, 5 years ago when Pamela and I had coffee, blah, 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 blah. Like, readers don't care. They just want to know, should I read this book? And when you see something authoritative, like Seth Godin recently endorsed John Acuff's book, Do Over, and on the cover, they put it on the cover, which is smart. It said, this is the best career book ever written.
Wow. Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, well, I better get it.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you don't know who Seth Godin is, you're like, whoa, that's really powerful. So you're going to want to help coach them anyway. So when you send an endorsement request, you're basically saying, are you in? Here's kind of the idea of what I'd like you to write. And then here's the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do that all up front, which is it's a lot, or you can kind of piece it out like I do.
Yeah, I really like the idea of piecing it out, because as someone who gets a lot of emails nowadays, it's hard when somebody dumps a really long and detailed email on you. You tend to kind of put it off and think, okay, I'll look at this when I have time.
Right.
So if people keep them short and sort of direct and to the point, it's a lot easier to say yes and give them what they need in little bits. So I like that. I like that approach.
And that way you don't feel like you're overstepping your bounds. So you and I are friends. And if you emailed me that big long email, I would not immediately read it, but I would read it because we're friends. And then I would go, okay, she needs this, but I'd feel sort of overwhelmed. Whereas if you go, hey Jeff, you know, we've been working on this for a while. Here's why I think it'd be great for you to endorse it. You know, what do you say? Are you in? I go, yep, I'm in. Or if I was skeptical, like I hadn't been working with you on this project, I might go, yeah, sure. Sounds interesting. Send the book and let me see. I mean, I never tell somebody I'm going to endorse something without looking at it, just because I don't want to say, yeah, and then it's really bad.
Yeah, sure.
Or something I disagree with. I mean, it's fascinating. I actually asked an endorsement from somebody who is now a friend of mine, and they said, yeah, let me see it. And I sent them the book and they declined. They said, no, I don't agree with this. And I was like, I mean, it broke my heart, but I totally respect that, you know, versus just saying, yeah, sure, let me put my name on one more thing. So ask them for permission. They go, yeah, sure, I'm in. Then you get to send the book and you say, hey, here's – when you send the book, I would send – kind of your pitch, which is, okay, here's the book. here's either what other people have said once you have some endorsements, and or if you have some endorsements from other people, include those from names that people recognize, and then say, hey, you're welcome to write whatever you want. But if you need an idea of what, kind of endorsement we're looking for, here's a sample endorsement. And that just helps people, especially if they've never done this before. I mean, you can reach out to people who might be, internet marketers, for example, but aren't actively blurbing books because they're not authors. I mean, most people who blurb books are authors. And if they don't know what to write, you can kind of help them in that. And then, of course, you need to give them a deadline. And typically, you're going to want to follow up on that. I have noticed anything, basically the ideal deadline is about 3 weeks.
Okay.
Anything longer than that, they're just going to sit on it. Anything shorter than that, and they're going to feel like they're being rushed. But, you want to give them enough time where, unless they're just really thoughtful, they're going to sit down and read it. They're going to wait till the last minute. We just need to, plan on worst case scenario and skim through it really quickly and then still try to hit the deadline. And so I try to give them, about 3 weeks, or if you do give them longer than that, definitely check back in at the 3 week mark if you haven't heard anything, because chances are they haven't done anything with it until that point.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I asked today, because I'll have just enough time to give them 3 weeks at this point. So that's great. I also wanted to ask you about Amazon and how Amazon fits into this whole picture. I know, and as a new author, you set up an author page on Amazon. And one of the ideas that I had was and I just want to know what you think about this. I've been thinking about writing some kind of manifesto that I would give away for free on Amazon that would allow me to then have an Amazon author page and get that kind of established and hopefully get people excited about the content of the book with the manifesto. I mean, I would give people real content in the manifesto, but it would be something free that would help to kind of position me as an author. What do you think about that idea?
So you want to have an author page before you publish your book, is what you're saying?
I mean, I'm thinking there might be an advantage to that, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, when you go look at somebody's author page, you can click that little follow button, mm-hmm. and it'll let you know, theoretically, it'll let you know when they publish a new book or something. That's an interesting idea. Typically, I would think of like publishing secondary material, like a little free manifesto you mentioned. I like that sort of as a post-launch strategy, because it's like something free out there and it's a sample that people can kind of read and then go, oh, I want to get the whole book kind of thing. But it'd be fascinating to position it basically as a free pre-launch content. Mm-hmm. and it's almost like an opt-in. Hey, I want to download this thing so that then I can, see if I want to buy the other thing, like a free webinar or a series of videos or what have you. Yeah, I like it. I like that idea. I'd do that like a month beforehand.
Right.
Another idea for listeners is, say you wrote a book about whatever. So, let's use your book, Pamela. You wrote a book about content marketing. A fun thing to do would be to go do a roundup. Go email 10 experts and ask them for a 1 to 2, pieces of advice on, for example, content marketing. And then you put that together in this really nice, well-designed, PDF ebook or something. And you could ask them to write an article or something as simple as just kind of a little paragraph quote. And then you have this curated list of expert advice on content marketing. And if people decide that they want to opt into that by downloading it, all of a sudden you've got this list of people who are, very interested in content marketing. And if you get all of these expert voices, I mean, they're basically lending credibility to your platform. And I think that's a pretty strong, pre-launch strategy, getting in front of people kind of by leveraging other people's expert opinions and voices, putting it together in some sort of curated resource, especially if there's original content. I mean, I guess you could go out and, pull quotes from these people's websites, but if you go out and email them and ask them for a, 1 to 2 sentence quote, which literally takes like 15 to 20 seconds, and lots of people are willing to do that, you know, now you've got this great resource that you can, you know, use, or a manifesto or what have you. But I think that's an easy way to get it out there.
I mean, the interesting thing about that, tapping people to get a few lines that you can quote them on, is I already did that, but it's going to be in the book.
Yeah, right, right.
It's the last chapter of the book, and I have quotes from really some fantastic quotes from really interesting, experienced content marketers. So that's part of the book content. And when I pitched it to them, I told them it was going to be part of my new book. So I don't feel completely comfortable taking that and using it as pre-launch content. I wish I'd thought about it that way, but I just didn't. So that's kind of why I'm leaning toward the manifesto idea. Because the other thing is, I want to get people riled up and thinking about the fact that even though you may not feel qualified as a writer, you can learn how to create content successfully. So I'd be able to put together some of the advice that's in the book and condense it so that people can actually get results from something that would be free. So we'll see. It's something I've been kicking around, and I wanted to see what you thought about it. All right. And then what about pre-selling and getting reviews before the book is officially launched? How does that happen? How do you set up a book to, like, for pre-sales? I don't want all the technical details, but just the conceptual idea behind it.
Yeah. A couple of things. First of all, you mentioned you did that for your last chapter of the book and you don't want to give that away, which I totally get. And I think that's fine. However, just to be clear, and I'm not pushing back on it, I just want to be clear for the listener. It's okay to give away pieces of your book. It's really good to give away pieces of your book. Introduction, first couple of chapters, that's really, really good. Because what will lead somebody to buy your book is either somebody telling them they should go read it, some measure of faith, you know, having heard about you and going, okay, I'm going to buy this book because I feel like I need it. Or even better, they get to experience part of the book and go, wow, this is really helpful. I want more of it. My friend Tim Grawl did a study on this, having worked with numerous New York Times bestselling authors, and he realized that the best marketing for the book is the book itself, giving away pieces of the book through articles, downloads, et cetera, lots of different formats, but give away a lot of the book. And he found that the ideal percentage of the book you want to give away is 40%.
Oh, wow.
Which I found surprising. And he says, if you give away more than that, they kind of feel like, okay, like they got something for free. They don't need to read the book. But if you give away less than that, I mean, it's just you would sell the most amount of copies if you gave away 40% of the book. Now, understand that that's not like, okay, you've got 10 chapters and you're just going to give away four free chapters to download. It might mean chapter 1 and 2 you can download on your site. You take chapter 3 and you go put it on, you know, ink.com or something. Like you cut it up and put it into a bunch of different places, you know, a bunch of pieces and places all over the internet and all over the world. Mm. You know, but like, that's the idea, is you're taking this content, you're cutting it up and putting it in a bunch of different places where people can find it. And you do that with 40% of the book and you'll sell more copies of the book. So anyway, I just wanted to.
No, I'm glad you clarified it. And it's not that I don't want to give away any of the book. I feel a little bit uncomfortable putting what other people contributed to the book into something free. I don't, sure. You know, because I didn't pitch it that way. So yeah. I just, yeah. But next time when I go around and ask people, I will definitely say I may use this as part of the marketing and just give them a heads up, and then I'll, you know, then I'll be free to do those things. So, All right. So pre-selling the book on Amazon and getting reviews ahead of time, I feel like I need to understand how that works as well, because I'm at the point that I need to start doing those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you work with, this is one of the advantages of working with a traditional publisher, although this is changing. I mean, a big advantage that, you know, typically when people have said traditional publishing over self-publishing is the opportunity to do pre-orders. And publishers work with Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all of the different booksellers to make your book page, you know, online available where people can go there. Typically, you know, no more than 90 days before the pub date, the date when it's officially going to be available for people to buy and actually get it. People go pre-order. They can go to Amazon and they can say, okay, I want this book. I want to be one of the first people to have this book. And what's cool about pre-orders for Amazon is often the book will actually, it's cool slash challenging, but it's cool for the reader because the book will ship sometimes before the pub date. So like by the day the book comes out, you may already have a copy of the book. The reason that matters for a lot of authors is because you can spend 3 months basically selling your book and they all count in terms of when the books are technically sold on the week it comes out. So
it helps your rankings.
Helps your rankings. It helps if you want to, you know, take a run at the bestseller list. It helps that. And it's just like if you sell a bunch of books in opening week, it just catches everybody's attention, including the booksellers who will order more copies of your book and put more on the shelf. You know, theoretically, there's, you know, it's a complex system, but it doesn't hurt you to take 3 months of sales and compress and concentrate them all in opening week. And so when I did this with The Art of Work, just as an example, I mean, we just, you know, for 2 months, that's all I talked about. We sold 15,000 copies. All of those copies, they counted on Nielsen BookScan, which is the tool that a lot of the bestseller lists use for evaluating, you know, whether or not, you know, we're going to count this as a USA Today or New York Times or Wall Street Journal bestseller. And so it all scans and basically looks like all these books sold in this week. And everybody understands that pre-orders are taken into account. So why does this matter? Because you can go get your tribe to go say they want your book and get whatever attention you have and concentrate it into opening week and get that big splash. I mean, that's sort of the strategy behind it, is I want to have a big splash. If it starts ranking well on Amazon, which it will if it starts selling well, then Amazon looks at that. It'll start recommending the book to other people. It'll say people who bought this also bought this, or you might want to check out this. And so you get some of that, you know, really good organic love, mostly from Amazon. I don't know what effect it has, if any, at barnesandnoble.com. It may. I just am less familiar with that system. So up until very, very recently, you really couldn't do that with a self-published book. And that was an advantage to, you know, going traditionally published.
Mm-hmm.
But now I believe, you can, as a self-published author, you can let people pre-order, just the Kindle version of your book. I think there's some ways to kind of jury rig a CreateSpace book. You can have it available for pre-order. There's a program called Amazon Advantage. It's an Amazon Advantage account. And I think you have to be in the USA or the UK to use it. And you can offer pre-orders that way. But directly through KDP, which is Kindle Direct Publishing, which is how you'll publish and distribute your Kindle book, you can now offer pre-orders.
Nice. That would be great.
That's your homework assignment. You have to look into that. I'll send you some links on that. But the strategy is you get months and months of sales all concentrated in a single week. And I mean, you can do all kinds of fun stuff with this. You can, you know, get everybody who pre-ordered it. You can give them bonuses. You can, you can have them take pictures on opening week. And, you know, say you get 1,000 people, you know, to buy your book by the time it comes out. And you encourage everybody to, you know, Instagram that. And there's just there's a power to getting all of those sales and all of those people all at the same time talking about your book. And that's that long tail, which we've been talking about. And like I said, self-published books, it used to be really difficult to do that. It's becoming more, you know, easier and easier. And I think it's going to become, you know, basically frictionless in the future.
Nice. All right. I have a lot to do. I have a long to-do list, but, and it's funny because I started this episode feeling this sense of accomplishment, like, oh, the book is done. Awesome. And now I'm like, oh gosh, I have a lot to do. So, but that's good. It's all good. It's, you know, I'm glad. And this is what I wanted to know so I could get to work on it. So I appreciate it.
Well, the, you know, in some ways the hardest part is over, and in other ways, like, your work's not done, you know? And I just, it's all hard. It's all a lot of hard work, you know? It's hard to write the book, and it's hard to market the book, and it's, you know, hard to keep talking about the book. And all of those pieces are important, but I think it's helpful to think in terms of phases. Right now we're in the pre-launch phase. So it's all about, it's coming. And what are the things that you can be doing now that you've written a good book? What are the things that you can be doing to build up to that launch? And pre-order, you know, creating some sort of pre-order system and a bonus package, some benefit that people get before the book comes out, I think is, you know, a really smart way to capitalize on that opportunity. And then once that's over, we move into launch phase. You know, you need to have at least a 30-day launch plan. Here's all the podcasts and guest posts I'm going to do. Here's the people that I want talking about it. One thing that we didn't really talk about is an advantage to getting people to blurb your book is it's a lot easier to go back to those people and say, hey, you know, here's a tweet that I wrote for you that you could share, or, you know, could I come on your podcast and talk about it? Or, you know, would it be all right if I wrote a guest post for you about it? And once somebody's endorsed something, you know, they're kind of bought into it a little bit more, and it's easier for them to promote it. And so, I mean, that's an advantage to doing that as well.
Right. Excellent. Yeah. And I'm at the same time that I'm reaching out to people to ask them for blurbs, I will be asking and trying to set those things up as well. So great stuff. Well, super helpful as usual. I wanted to remind people, if you have learned as much as I have, please take a moment to leave a review on iTunes. We always appreciate hearing from you. Jeff, thank you so much as usual.
Thank you. My pleasure.
All right. And we'll be back in the next episode to continue the marketing saga for this book. Thanks for listening, everyone.